One, two, three. This is Dr. Alex Avila and Love University. I'm an author, psychologist, and speaker. And every week we talk about how to love yourself, others, and higher nature. And I've been very excited that this summer we've been doing a lecture series, guest lecturers that come in and talk about love and relationships and self-esteem and really give impart a lot of wisdom and knowledge. Because this is the kind of stuff we don't learn in school, in normal school. We learn alphabets and we learn science and math, which is also useful. But we don't learn about how to have self-esteem, how to have love in our life, how to have great relationships and even be successful in many different ways. So today I'm very pleased to present a very distinguished guest, Dr. Paulette Sherman, licensed psychologist with a concentration in family therapy, romantic relationships. She's a dating coach. She's been a therapist for over 20 years. She was awarded Woman of the Year in psychology for New York State. She's been an expert on many outlets, the Huffington Post, CBS Early Show, New York Times, and she's author of, it's hard to believe this, 21 books, including Dating from the Inside Out and When Mars Woman Date. Welcome, Dr. Sherman.
Thank you so much, Dr. Villa. I'm happy to be here.
Perfect. And, oh, by the way, it's Avila, just in case you know the Spanish pronunciation.
Avila, that's
yes.
Prettier. Okay.
Not a problem. I got to ask you, though, it's amazing you've written 21 books. You kind of make me a little bit envious. I've written about five myself. How are you so prolific? How do you write so many books?
Five is good. Five is very good.
Oh, okay.
So when I got breast cancer, I was very scared, obviously. This was 6 years ago, and then my kids were very little, like 1 and 3.
Yes.
And I prayed, and I got a message that I had done the main things I was here to do in terms of my soul mission, but that I had a legacy of books to write. And I got the number 22. Sounds a little crazy.
Ah.
I'd already published one or maybe like two other sort of short ones
yes.
with my work. So I just kind of, while I was in the hospital, my mantra became my mission is stronger than my cancer. And I just started to write and they kind of came through me. So yeah.
So what are your tips for, we have some authors, writers out there, because you've written a lot of blogs. I mean, you're very prolific.
Thanks.
Do you write every day in a certain time? Do you have a discipline that you do?
Oh, I wish. Cause I have two kids, so it's very chaotic. And, you know, I work as a therapist and coach. So
yes.
No, I mean, I think what actually ironically helped, which is kind of scary, is that because I was in the hospital so much during the time and everything, I had, and I commuted over an hour, I was able to write on the train and then while I had downtime then.
Right.
Now, I do live near the beach, so I kind of use it as an excuse as my outdoor office. So like today, I just went out. So when I have periods of time, if my kids are away or at camp, I try to write, but I don't have a regular writing time. And luckily, if I'm writing for myself and I don't have a publisher, I don't have a deadline. So I can just kind of do.
I see.
Go with
now,
the
you're
flow.
Like a fast talker. You're like me. Are you from New York by any chance?
I am. I'm from Manhattan. I'll slow down.
Okay. I heard that you guys are fast talkers. I don't know. Is that true or is that a stereotype?
I think it can be true. Yeah.
Okay. That's kind of cool. I'm the same way. So let's get into your material because you have a lot of fascinating material. In fact, one of the most prolific I've seen in terms of your website and articles and things. And one of the books you written is called The Law of Attraction and Dating. And you also talk about spiritual dating and things like that. So I'm very curious about that. In terms of, do you have a spiritual background? Are you involved in Eastern philosophy or Western psychology? What is your background?
So I was raised Jewish, but I'm not very religious, although my grandmother was a Holocaust survivor, so it's important to me. But I think I've always been somewhat spiritual. I've learned about goddesses and shamanism, just anything that interests me. I actually am a Reiki master. So I've always been the one to read all those Atria books and Llewellyn books just for fun.
Interesting.
But I keep it separate from my psychology practice. It's just a personal interest of mine. And then when I got the breast cancer, ironically, I was referred to a spiritual teacher to work with at that time. And then I just continued working with him weekly for about 6-7 years now or something.
Okay. So one thing that you say, Dr. Paulette, is to become the partner you want to attract. What does that mean?
So I believe that we create things from the inside out. So it's not just creating a list and looking for that person. It's actually that you embody what you're looking to create. So, you know, a lot of times our unconscious issues, we pick people for that reason. We're not even aware of it. And then also our values, you know, the person who's going to match us is going to be somebody that matches the things that we most embody and emulate in our lives.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But let me throw a paradox at you, Dr. Paulette. How about if we look at the other way around? What if we say we attract the partner we want to become? Does that work? For example, let's say a person wants to be more spiritual and they actually go to join a spiritual group and they want to meet a spiritual person that can help them be more spiritual. Is that a good approach or what do you think about that?
You mean like opposites attract kind of thing, right?
That yeah, like in other words, find a person that already has qualities that you want to develop, and then maybe they can help you develop them. I mean, I was going to say, for example, spirituality or whatever it is. Is that an approach that can be used, or do you feel the inside out approach is better?
I think everybody makes that decision for themselves, what they want the most, and it's great to be open and be inspired and to develop yourself. I think what happens a lot of times is that, at least I've seen this, is that I'll have a couple where they're opposite. And so you'll have, say, a lawyer who is really great at goal setting, and she'll bring that out in this yes. other guy, and then vice versa. He's very playful, and she loves that, and you know she has more fun. And then they're sitting years later in couples therapy, and he's saying, God, I need someone fun. I can't stand it. I married my mother. And she'll say, I need an adult, you know? Like, he's a
exactly.
child, you know? So I think we at first admire the opposite in the other person, and then we want to change them and be like us. So it can be harder, and it also can be more growth producing.
That's a good point. And I think my book, Left Types and Guy Types, we talk a little bit about off air, talks about compatibility in the personality types. And for example, the spontaneous person with the structured person. In the beginning, they can kind of think, well, this is kind of cool. The other person is going to organize me, and the other person will bring me fun. But eventually, if they don't respect each other's style, then they can attack each other. Like, you're so messy and you're a stick in the mud. So that's an issue in that sense. And,
absolutely.
And the other thing you talk about is vibrate self-love. And I kind of like that term, vibrate self-love. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of what we say is not even verbal. It's our tone. It's our posturing. And so when you go on a date, if we're talking about dating, you can kind of see when somebody is insecure, when they're very shy, or they're very judgmental, even if it's in their head. We're projecting so much, not just with words, about who we are. And, you know, when I've asked men or different people, they always say that they look for confidence, someone who likes themselves, yes. likes their life, and likes the other person.
Right.
So, you know, I think that that really does register and come across energetically.
Exactly. Now, another term we use is remain in place, which to me sounds like being persistent or patient in terms of finding that ideal person, the ideal mate. And, you know, in Eastern philosophy, we have a concept called the hara. I don't know if you're familiar in martial arts.
Whereas no.
It's a point 2 inches below your navel where it's kind of the center of your
hara.
Power.
Yes.
Yeah, the hara.
Yes.
And basically, martial artists cannot be moved when they're focused on that center point, or you can say the chakra, the stomach chakra. So in that case, a person is very fixed in what they want. You know, they're very very focused and in tune. So is that important for people? Like, let's say that, you know, you're having trouble in dating, you're not meeting the right people, the right person, you feel frustrated. Why is it important to remain in place with your
I really feel like with anything, it's important to remain in place. Maybe that's as a therapist, right? But definitely in dating, because it's so many ups and downs, as you probably know,
yeah.
so much rejection, people stand you up. You start to very easily, you could go inside and start to think it's you and then
yes.
and to doubt yourself. And I think whatever you're creating, you come back to your inner vision, you come back to your intention and your purpose, because that's what you can control.
Mm.
And eventually the outside catches up with it. But to not reject yourself in the process, and to hold on to that idea, that vision of what you're doing all of this for, because the morale really can go down otherwise, and then you're at the effect of your circumstances.
Yeah, this could be very tricky. I can see how someone would really get very almost depressed, like, you know, everyone want to meet is, you know, either a loser or negative or not compatible. You know, what's wrong with me kind of thing. So how do you switch that what's wrong with me to, you know, having more faith, I guess, that the universe or the higher power can bring you that mate?
Well, one way is to switch what's wrong with me to what's right with me. So I actually, one exercise is to have them write 25 things that make them a great catch.
I like that.
Not in an arrogant kind of way, but just yes. we all have wonderful things. And
yes.
if they can't do that, sometimes I'll say, well, what would your best friend or your mom say about you? Or, you know, how can we do this together? But then to try to create that tape instead.
Mm-hmm.
And because we also all have things that are difficult, right? So it's which ones you choose to focus on that really will create an energy and an attractor field. But also, I think to normalize the process and know that, you know, I always say 99% of the time, you know, it's not going to work out. You might be with someone 10 years, but they may not be your husband or your wife. So to realize that this is just part of the process, it does suck. But that, you know, you got to get back on the horse, and it's just like anything else, publishing or whatever, right?
Yes.
Your book could be great, but you may get a lot of no's, and it's just, it could be time, it could be a lot of things. So to keep believing in yourself and to keep finding new ways to move forward.
That sounds good. And Dr. Paulette, I like that you're spiritual, funny, and compassionate.
Aw, thank you.
I need 23 more, but I don't know if I can find them, but I guess I
have.
Now, one thing is, Dr. Paulette is... You talk about being persistent. I'm going to throw another paradox at you, and you kind of brought it up already. You say be persistent, but at the same time, be open to what the universe may bring. Isn't that a contradiction? I mean, if you want something and then you kind of say, well, if it doesn't work out, you know, it doesn't work out. How do we deal with that contradiction?
I don't think it is a contradiction. In fact, like a lot of times things come in a form you never would think. And I was talking about this the other day because I was kind of like, you know, being negative about publishing a moment with my new book. And I was saying that, you know, what I realized is there's something to beginner's mind, right, where you're automatically positive because you don't really know, have a lot of history behind you or something like that. And my first book was picked up by Simon & Schuster without an agent, wow, without anything. And that was, of course, a different time in publishing and everything. Sure. And then another time after the cancer, I was just pushing out books without, you know, like month after month just on Amazon. Sure. And I handed it to my Reiki teacher, and then she said, oh, I'm going to show this to my publisher. And they liked it, and that was it. Wow. So, you know, I guess the thing is not that that will always happen, but if you continue to come back to what you know is true and to really vibrate that, you never know how it's going to come to you. It may come in a form that you don't want to get attached to to the how. You want to just really stay focused on the why.
I see. So what if a woman says, I want a tall, dark, handsome, great chef, great lover, great dad, et cetera, et cetera, Wall Street broker, and that's what she wants, and then she sticks with that, and then she's disappointed that she doesn't find it. What do you say to her?
Well, you know, I always use the example. I don't know if you ever watched Sex and the City, but you probably heard of it.
Sure.
But there's, you know, with Charlotte, I believe it was. I'm trying to remember the characters at this point. But anyway, she wanted this waspy kind of guy. He was gorgeous. He was almost royalty or whatever. And then she ended up with like a Jewish bald lawyer she was afraid to go out with, you know.
Okay.
But the point is, like, she may have thought that's what she wanted, but what she actually needed or what worked for her was this other guy. So you don't want to get too attached to a limiting belief about something. You want to experience things, be open, and be willing to see what is going to come back and what matches. So
that makes a lot of sense. And I think part of that is the idea of kind of accepting the partner as they are, assuming, you know, everything else is compatible and good. You know, we talk about in love types, the introvert versus the extrovert personality. So sometimes people have what we call the dating masquerade. They have a mask on to kind of like impress their partner. So an introvert might actually start going out a lot with someone in the beginning of a dating relationship and kind of act like an extrovert. But then once they get married, they want to stay home. And the extrovert will get mad. They say, hey, what happened to you? I thought you were outgoing. So how do you deal with that kind of situation where you find out later that they're actually a different personality? Do you accept that? Do you try to change them?
Well, if I'm working with them, I try to prevent that altogether in the beginning, because in my book, I talk about it, how I, like, you know, there are different things like the rules and different philosophies where people really try to do what they think works in general to catch somebody. But then what happens is, like you're saying, the person doesn't really know you, and then it becomes a problem later. So the joke's on everybody, you know, on everybody. So I think that it's best to be yourself. Now, do I think we all have things to work on and grow? If you're too introverted and then you clam up and you can't talk at all, how are they going to get to know you? So as a therapist, I would try to work with them on, you know, expressing their truth and be, you know, getting out of their own way in different ways. However, I wouldn't say pretend to be something you're not, because again, it's not going to end up being a good fit in the end.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, because introversion is about energy within. Like the introvert gets energy, you know, by thinking and meditating and kind of being within their own mind, and the extrovert gets it from socialization. So and this can happen sometimes in the kind of combination where they kind of like need to respect each other's style, you know, their personalities. Now, the other thing that we talk about, that I hear you talk about, and I guess this is another book that you wrote, and again, I'm amazed that you have so many different ideas. You must be an idea person.
Thank you.
Are you a Gemini by any chance?
I'm an Aries.
Oh, okay.
I'm an Aries on the cusp of Pisces.
Actually, I'm a Gemini, so you're pretty creative. This book that you wrote, When Mars Women Date, I think that's a great title. John Gray, you know, he endorsed my book, Love Ties, back in the day. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. And it sounds like you're talking about women who are more thinking-oriented, maybe more of the yang energy, you know, maybe the more dominant energy style, and career ambitious and all that. Now, does that kind of woman do better with a more softer, sensitive male, the more yin energy male in the Eastern philosophy?
I mean, I do better with that kind of male, but I can't say. I really try to never speak for everybody, because I've had those type of women that really, like, because they're like that, they admire someone more like them, and they need someone even more yang than them, right?
Right.
Or they won't respect them, or, you know, other women. I think it can be a good fit, what you're saying.
Yes.
Because, you know, maybe they don't want to stay home and do like that cooking or the housework, or they want to be with the kids, but they want to be able to travel. And so somebody who's happier doing that, it's a nice fit. So, yeah, I think that's what I wrote about, is that it really could be either way. And, you know, that ideally people can just support each other as human beings and their goals, and both at home and at work.
Yeah, because I wrote a book called The Gift of Shyness. I talk about the sensitive or introverted person, male or female. But, the introvert or sensitive male, for example, may want to stay home and take care of the kids, and maybe they're a softer personality, and she's more take charge and more in control in certain situations. But the key is to respect each other's style, because if they don't, she's going to think, he has no manpower, and, he's going to call her names or think of her in a negative way. So how do you deal with that combination? Let's say you have this kind of couple. I think you even mentioned, what if she's more educated and makes more money than him? Isn't that going to pose a lot of issues and problems in terms of the relationship? How do you deal with a couple like that?
Yeah, I wondered that myself before writing the book, because I remember when I was a lot of years ago, but I went to a panel with Gloria Steinem or something, and the women were saying that sometimes they would have to not dumb down their success, but try to be extra sensitive to their husbands.
Yeah, the ego aspects.
To the ego. And I remember wondering if that was true. But at the point later when I wrote this book, which I think was 2012, I interviewed a bunch of men who were like stay-at-home husbands or had, careers, but not as ambitious. And they didn't really have a problem with it. I mean, I don't know the percentage. I didn't do a huge study or something. Yes. So I think it really depends on the guy, their values, how they were raised. Sometimes I find that if they had mothers that were like that, that was their blueprint, their familial blueprint. And I also think it is changing, because they just did a study, I think it was Match.com with Helen Fisher, where they found that women were trying to not talk about their accomplishments in their career, actually men liked it. And so she was saying, cut that out, like talk about it,
That's interesting.
But it takes a while, because if everybody else is saying not to, and they're experts, then they don't want to rock the boat. So.
Exactly. Yeah, because I heard older research that educated females who are more educated have troubles in relationships with less educated males. But, that may be changing, as you say. And again, it depends on the couple's connection and other factors.
Yes.
And possibly even spirituality, which we're going to talk a little bit about, which is very fascinating.
Yeah, I'd love
to. Now, Dr. Sherman, one thing that you kind of write about here, and I'm going to paraphrase it in kind of a colloquial term, is you're saying something like, stick with your spouse, even if you don't blankly blank feel like it. So, in other words...
Is that what I said? Did I use curse words?
Well, no curse words. Okay. But when you're mad and upset, and you talk about love is a commitment, not a feeling. Tell us all about that, because people say, well, I fall in love and I should be happy in life. So what's going on with this?
I don't know. I'd be interested to know what you think about it, because I don't know if you're married, but I know that's a really good one for me and just everybody, because there are times that you just, you don't like your spouse at that moment, and it'd be very easy to just threaten divorce, and I'm sure people do and don't mean it.
Sure.
But the thing is that you did make a commitment, and I often joke around that, we have these white weddings where we all wear white and say wonderful things about each other, but we should have black weddings where we say, like, when your shadow side comes out and I can't stand you and you have stuff to work on, I'm going to be there anyway, right?
Yeah, like the when you feel blankly blank, you still stay with the person, right? No matter what.
I'm not saying that. I do believe that there are, just to be clear, I believe that there can be deal breakers if somebody is, like, emotionally abusive or physically. Yeah. But I just think that, John Gottman found that there's 5 unsolvable problems for every marriage. So you think you're going to find someone who makes you happy again, who's better in general. I'm talking about the general marriage. And then you have the same problems. So it's not, nobody's perfect, and neither are you. And it's very easy for myself included to point the finger, right? But we're all here to kind of grow through both.
Yeah, because if you remember the theories of Sternberg, the triangular theory of love, he talked about different parts of love. For example, commitment, intimacy, and passion. Mm-hmm. Passion meaning sexuality, and intimacy meaning emotional connection. And, some societies base it on commitment first. For example, certain arranged marriages in certain cultures. And actually, some of those actually work out well, because they actually really commit to it, religious marriages. In our society, we press the romantic or the sexual first, and that may not work out because they don't have the base, underlying base. But I think you're saying start with that commitment part of it, work on the marriage or work on the relationship, because it's work. And people work on their car in all day long or some job.
Or their job,
They don't work 5 minutes on their marriage. I think that's what you're trying to say, right? To put effort into it.
Absolutely. They think that, I fell in love. This person made me feel better than everybody. I'm so happy. And if they don't, then time for a new person. And actually, I think, as time goes on, that person can make you feel worse than anyone else, too, right? Because they're bringing out stuff you need to work on.
Yeah, they know your pressure points, right? Your little sensitive areas, right? But also, you talk a lot about the spiritual aspects, and you mentioned something called love karma, which is, what do you mean by that? That there are times when you don't feel good and they pick you up. What does that mean, love karma?
You're reminding me of my book, since I've written so many since then, but I think what I meant, I haven't reviewed it, but I think what I meant was, I thought I meant be kind on dates and stuff. Even if you don't like someone, don't yes. You know, leave after 2 minutes or say something really rude to them, because the truth is that, you know, what, not only what goes around comes around, but you want to be treated well. And I see so many wounded birds kind of that are daters. It's just so hard, you know, and then it starts to sometimes generalize to humankind. You know, people will say, not only do I not want to date anymore, but now I need to just go out socially and see nice people, because I'm starting to think everyone's like this.
I see.
Because there's so many phenomena, you know, online. Yes.
So you're saying if you're mean to other people, people will be mean to you? Is that what you're trying to say? Or what is
I mean, hopefully people are who they are, but I just think that it's good in general to try to be what you want to see out there, right? So try to be kind as much as possible. Try to you know, leave people feeling good, even if they're not your husband. I give some examples that, you know, sometimes, and not everyone wants friends, but sometimes someone can become a friend. Sometimes you can fix them up with someone else. Sometimes you can learn something new. There are many reasons to date, and you can learn a lot from what you don't want too.
Yes.
Going forward. So
And I like that you talk about spiritual elements like patience and compassion in dating. And, you know, first of all, be patient to find the right person. Also be compassionate. Maybe the person's having a bad day. Maybe they come from a tough life. And, you know, some other personality can be explained by that. So you have some compassion for them. And I think that's a good way to look at it, you know, to be able to have that. There's actually, I'm working on a book called Love Q, which talks about spiritual intelligence, you know, love intelligence.
Oh, wow, cool.
And the elements of, for example, patience, compassion, gentleness. These are things we don't really talk about in most dating, you know, websites or whatever. People go for either attraction or other aspects. So I think I like what you're doing. You're looking at the spiritual side of things. You're going deeper.
I'm going to recommend that book because, I really feel that there's a lot of not good things going on that maybe, you know, you'll write about too on the web. You know, of people kind of like love bombing and these things where they just, you know, ghost you all of a sudden and whatever. And I think it's just, it would be wonderful if there were certain new norms.
Right. Because I saw a bunch of negative, you have some kind of vocabulary words for dating, some kind of weird terms. Like ghosting, or what was the other stuff you had there? Other stuff
love
like that.
Bombing. It's kind of like where they just drown you with all this romance and grandeur and love, and then all of a sudden they get angry and switch on you. You know,
and they ghost you. Okay.
It could be ghosting or just not being so nice anymore. All of a sudden, you're like, what happened?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. So there's a lot of fascinating material here. But you know, it's so hot out here. I'm getting a little sweaty at this moment here in California.
Yeah.
So I think it's time to take a bath. Or something like that. And I think you wrote an incredible book that's called Sacred Couples Bath.
How did you read all these?
You kept me up all night. You know, you drove me crazy with all this stuff. So, but no, it's really interesting. So you wrote a book on how to have a spiritual bath with your partner. Tell us about how did you come up with that?
So I'm trying to remember. I actually think I came up with, you asked me how I get my ideas. This is a funny one, but
Were you in the bathtub or no?
Yeah, I was in the bathtub. Okay. And basically my teacher had been telling me to meditate, my spiritual teacher, and it was too noisy with the kids running around. Yes. So I found the one place they left me alone was the bath. So I started doing that myself. And then I started on date nights for a free date night, because we go every week, my husband and I, I showed him the bath ritual, and he liked it because it was free and it was relaxing and he didn't have to talk. But we would set an intention around different things and to get guidance for our relationship. And it was really nice. And so I started to develop not only those baths for us and myself, but then the book idea so that I could share it with other people, because I found it was so helpful. So
Dr. Paulette, so you're saying a couple that would get into a bathtub together, not just to enjoy it, but to have a spiritual experience, I think is what you're saying.
Yes, I talk about the process of attunement, which it's sort of like the mom and child, that they're without words, but they're connecting. And I think it can be very good to relax together and attune. And what I talk about in the book, because it's with a spiritual publisher, Llewellyn, is how to meditate together, to set an intention, to try to ask for guidance, if you believe in this, but from your higher selves or from the angels, like there are different angels for different things. So that's what this book was about. And you can even put in different beautiful smelling essential oils and Epsom salt to like kind of take away the day, because I find when couples, at least with us, you know, he's a social worker and therapist, I'm a therapist, we have kids, it's like you just can't transition that easily into being romantic if you're exhausted, you know. So sometimes to have that little transition, or if you're angry too before you talk, so it's kind of like a new little way
I like that.
Yeah.
You said that a woman may need 10 to 20, 30 minutes to transition from work into sexuality. You said she needs a little bit.
Yes, I read that. And that makes sense, because some women, they need to be warmed up more. They need compliments. They need to be in a good mood, whatever, right? Right. And men sometimes, you can't stereotype, but sometimes they don't need that, you know? So
okay. But the thing about being angry, that's kind of cool. So if you're angry, get in that tub, right? And start to relax a little bit. Or if you're kind
of... Yeah, or take a time out. I tell my couples, like, you know, one woman wants to, or it could be a guy, but wants to talk immediately. The other one doesn't want to talk ever, right? It's too threatening. So you usually say within 24 hours, we'll make a time to talk.
Yes.
So this way, I mean, you can actually feel better about each other, shift the energy first. So you're not coming from ego. And you can connect more on a higher level.
That's really great. I really love shower. I love any water. You know, I guess they say that sensitive people and intuitive people need that to kind of, you know, clear the negative energies. So anything like showers and baths, I mean, I really love them. And the other thing I'm thinking, what if you have a little bathtub and two big people? What do you do?
I can answer that question because we have an apartment.
Yes.
So we have a very, it's nothing like my cover of my beautiful cover of my book. Unfortunately, it's teeny tiny, but somehow we manage it.
Oh, okay.
So it's possible, you know?
Okay. So you have a little bathtub too? To fit the
two
people?
Yeah, I do. It's a little bathroom. You barely, like, you walk in and that's it. There's not any extra room.
I guess you could rent a hotel room with a jacuzzi or something, or go to places where they have
that. Yeah, but I wouldn't just do it once a year. Because I mean, I don't know, other people, maybe they could, but yeah, I think it's fine.
Right, and common jacuzzis, you don't want to do it there either because it's public, right? You need a private place.
It's true, you don't know how clean it is.
Okay. You would do it in public place too?
Oh, well, I did have a section where if people didn't have a bath or just wanted to do public ritual, like my husband and I actually went to this thing called Air Baths. It's A-I-R-E. It's beautiful, and it's a spiritual space with, you feel like you're in a monastery. There's if you're ever in New York, you should go. It's candles all around, just gorgeous, and different pools, like Roman pools with the floatatorium.
Wow.
So we spent, like, great for couples. So we spent time there, and actually Dr. Emoto had died, so I did a little ritual and prayer for him. So you can do things like that.
Cool.
Or hot tub. So
So you say 25 to 30 minutes, and I do this every day, every week, once a week, once a month. What's the typical?
It's totally up to the person. I thought it was catchy and maybe reasonable to say 52 bathing rituals, one for each week of the year in 5 life areas.
Cool.
So that's not just for the couples, but you can do them individually. So that's how I arranged it. But I actually take daily baths for 20 minutes in the morning, or if not in the evening. So for me, it's like instead of meditating, but not everybody has time or wants to do that. So
I see. Now, you said this can actually improve your sex life in terms of, I guess you can imagine what you want to do in bed, or, you know, maybe you're with a person in the bathtub. And what are the oils that you said can improve the sexuality and romance aspect of things? You said there are certain kind of oils for that.
Yeah, let's see. I might be lucky and be able to recall them all off the top of my head, but some of them are like, what is the one with the N? There's one that is supposed to be seductive for men.
You said Y-L-A-N-G. How do you say that?
Oh, Ylang-ylang is one of them, but that's not the one I was thinking of.
Oh, okay.
There's another one with an N that I'm forgetting at the moment that I use.
Neroli? Is it Neroli?
Neroli, exactly. Neroli. Oh, okay. And also jasmine is like a great love oil.
Okay.
And I use rose for just like unconditional love. And I also use lavender with him sometimes.
Okay.
Use cinnamon. But anyway, I use lavender because that's good for relaxation.
Right.
But
let me ask you this, Paulette. We're looking at this ritual. It sounds beautiful to me, but how are you going to get the average guy? Males may not be all that into this kind of stuff, right? You know, like, come
on. It's very frou-frou, right? It's very frou-frou for a guy.
Yeah. For some guys that are, you know, different energy style that they think it's kind of silly. How do you get those guys in the tub?
Well, one thing is that, again, I think if they're practical, they may not want to go out and spend $100 on date night. So, then you have to spend how much on a babysitter? $15 at least, or an hour.
Okay.
So you can say, like, I'll cook a beautiful dinner. You know, we'll give each other massages. Basically, you don't have to say it's a prelude to sex, but, you know, it could be a way to connect and have that foreplay, right? In a sense, that connection time that women might need or they might want also. And so I think it is very enjoyable because it's not they have to do anything, right? They get in, they relax, and they may or may not get guidance. Sometimes my husband won't get guidance and I will, you know, if that's part of it that they want to do. It doesn't require much. And I guess the main thing would be if you're willing to set up the bath, like you put the candles, you set up the whole bath, then they just get in. And if they don't want to, they don't want to. I don't think you should force anybody.
Exactly. Of course, you can say it's going to improve your sex life. You know, you're going to have better sex, perhaps, more romance. In your relationship.
So relaxation, connection.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
And the other thing you talk about is you also mentioned prayer. Now, you know, there's something called tantra sexuality where you combine spirituality with sexuality, but a lot of Western people don't know much about that. So why do you bring prayer into a bathtub?
Why do I? Well, I brought it into the bathtub because for bad reason, because I was trying to put all the tools together in a way that I could do it on a daily basis and take it, like, leverage an existing ritual that I do anyway where everyone leaves me alone. So that's why I did law of attraction, which I believe in, affirmations, prayer, meditation, all within 20 minutes because that's all I had. So it was kind of out of mother's, you know, whatever invention is the, or necessity is the mother of invention, that idea. So that's why I did it. But I think it is helpful because, again, people will take a bath or brush their teeth on a daily basis or shower, and people will leave them alone. So they're already doing that, and they know these tools are all good for them. Maybe they just didn't know how to start it or where to put it into their day. So that was my idea.
Now, you're saying not just for a couple, but for single people as well, for their own, like rejuvenation or something. You think it's a good idea to do the bath?
Yeah, I mean, I can't say it's a good idea for somebody who maybe, like, doesn't believe in God or angels. They may not want to pray. You know, they can talk to their higher self if they believe in that. So it depends on your belief system. But for me, I was already working with angels, and, like, I believed in that, and that was helpful to me during the breast cancer, and I wanted to continue that. They actually show, and I'm not trying to get all religious on anyone, but they show that prayer is actually really helpful in a marriage. I don't have the research in front of me, but I wrote an article about it. And so it actually is helpful for marriage, and it does help to, like, wish, you know, to bring in a higher power if you believe in that, of unconditional love and guidance, and it's a higher level of consciousness than just our egos. So sometimes it can be helpful if you had a fight or something to bring in, what would be helpful here? Like, what do our higher selves say if you believe in that and you're accessing that level of consciousness? So that's what it's about.
That's interesting. Yeah. And you say things like when you pray together in a sacred bath, you and your partner, you have more likely to forgive each other, more trust, and more relaxation. So all these sounds like really great benefits to be able to pray together in a sacred bath.
Yeah, you said it better than me because I didn't have to in front of me, yes.
And I guess the higher purpose too, like, you know, it's not just about having a day-to-day life, but, you know, maybe a higher purpose for the relationship, creating some positivity in the world and things like that. So I really like that you bring spirituality into, you know, romance and sexuality and relationships. It's kind of a great combination. I don't see that very often. Do you see that often?
You know, I was about to say the same to you because I was listening to a little bit of your podcast and you had one on spirituality. And there's another therapist that had me on her show a few times, and she wrote a book about her mother dying. Kind of being in contact with her. And I was so thrilled because she's a psychologist, and I don't see those two things together a lot. I think because maybe people keep it personal because they don't want to, you know, I don't know, as a psychologist, maybe involve the two.
Right.
But it is nice to see the kindred spirits.
Of course. Are you an INFP by any chance in the Myers-Briggs?
You know what? I think, what was it? INFJ? I don't know, it was P or J.
Okay.
I think I was, but that was years ago, and I wanted to do it again. I haven't, so I don't know.
Okay, so you're like close to the, I call it the idealistic philosopher or the mystic writer. So both of us have, you know, that desire to kind of intuitively help people and feeling-wise. Now, what makes you who you are, Dr. Paulette? Because I know you've mentioned the breast cancer a little bit. I mean, how has it affected your life, and have you learned something from this? It's a very difficult experience, but tell us about that a little bit.
So it definitely has affected my life for sure. I think it was very scary at first finding that out and being like, wow, I could die very young if that was the case. You know, luckily it wasn't. And it made me really, I believe in soul mission and that we're here for a reason. And as you said, I'm a healer. And so I wanted to really focus on doing that while I was here. And so I've always wanted to write. So I really enjoyed making the time because I was kind of being practical and saying, well, now I have kids, so let me just focus on the therapy and then that. You know, and of course I want to be a good mother still, but I think it's been good to create a little time of my own for that, to leave a legacy. So I'm really happy about that. I think that, sometimes I could be better with just my health. One of the lessons I think is self-care, but I have had this daily ritual of the bath now. So that's been consistent.
Well, there you go. The bath is great.
Yeah. So that's those good. Kind of things. And I think it was very helpful to me to know that I would maybe be helping other women with breast cancer get through it. Cause I wrote like 3 or 4 books on what I learned during the breast cancer that might be helpful to other people because you're so overwhelmed at the time that you really can't, you know, read 60 books.
Okay. So you're healthy now, Dr. Paulette?
Cancer-free? Yes. Okay. 7 years in March. Well, so
I'm very happy there. You're an amazing, inspirational person for other people that have gone through, you know, traumas and other things. And I really appreciate having you on the show. This has really been a very content-filled show, a lot of great information. I think we're going to inspire a lot of people to really, you know, connect deeper at a deeper level, psychologically, spiritually, physically, and emotionally, And these kind of things can really make a big difference, I think, in love and relationships and society. Now, is there anywhere where, Dr. Paulette, where they can see your work and your books and your website?
So all my books are on Amazon, I think under Dr. Paulette Kaufman, K-O-U-F-F-M-A-N, Sherman. And I have a website, drpaulettesherman.com, and my dating and relationshipschool.com.
Okay. And do you do coaching? Do you do seminars or workshops? Anything like that?
So yes, right now, just for personal reasons, I am doing therapy. I'm in my office a couple times a week and then coaching a couple times a week. And I have not been doing teleclasses and classes, but I plan to in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you ever get out to LA, maybe we can collaborate, or if I get out to New York, we can put together.
I would love that. Definitely visit me, though. I live near Coney Island, so I'd love that.
Oh, beautiful.
I'd love to meet up.
That'd be a lot of fun. Yeah. Because I do something called the dating masquerade, where everyone has a mask on and then they meet each other based on their personality types.
It would be so fun. I would love that.
It's a great event. And definitely, we're definitely kindred spirits. So again, thank you very much, Dr. Paulette, for being on the show. And we definitely would love to have you back. And I know we can talk for hours, I think. There's a lot of stuff here.
Yeah,
it's really fascinating.
Anytime. I'd love to come back and I will get your books. I'm excited to read your next one. I loved your first one, so I'm excited to read the other ones.
I really appreciate that. That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
So again, this has been Dr. Alex Avila with Love University. And we really have enjoyed today. If you want to reach us and talk about today's show or even be a guest on the show, you can reach us at lovetype4u@AOL.com. That's LOVETYPE, number 4, letter U at AOL.com. You can call us at 310-226-8090, our website, loveuniversity.love. Again, thank you for being here at Love University. You can now put away your iPads, your pens, your pencils, your computers. Until next time, this is Dr. Avila with Love University.